Bali.
Where are you off to next? Do you have any time in London to do?
Actually, I've been here for a while. And London is actually in my plans for future. I may can live here.
Really?
Yeah. I'm moving to Europe and there is a number of things that I want to do. They're different, separate from my career, that the best places to do are here.
Let's talk about that. That sounds amazing.
Okay.
Do you know where you're going to live in London?
Not yet.
I live in Holloway?
I am just searching for a house these days.
Are you?
Yes.
Are you house hunting now?
Yeah, I am in the search.
It's fantastic.
This is the most expensive city in the world.
It's ridiculous.
Oh my God.
It's ridiculous. Sydney's pretty expensive, but we'll get on to London real estate. Really delighted to be joined by Antonio Banderas on the Empire podcast. Antonio, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us.
My pleasure.
SpongeBob SquarePants, sponge out of water. Let's start with that. I don't have kids. I wasn't versed in the mythos of SpongeBob, but you open this film, your character, you play Burger Beard. He's a pirate. He has an agenda, as pirates do. And as soon as I saw you, I knew I was going to have fun. I mean, you seem to be having the best time ever making this movie.
I did have the best time when I was in that period of time that goes from action to cut. But the rest of the time was quite miserable because I have to wear this long beard and a long wig. And I was in Savannah, Georgia, which, don't take me wrong, I mean, the place is unbelievably beautiful, but it's warm and it's very humid. And 12 hours with that thing on my face, like a bear attacked me in the morning, and I couldn't get rid of it.
You had to take it off every day, reapply, or did you sleep in it?
No. I had, I have to take them out and all this hair and the glue. Couldn't, it would have been really a problem of getting on a hospital because it's very toxic. The glue that they use, they have ether, and it has also a lot of alcohol, so it irritates your skin very much. And so at the end of the day, I spent like an hour in the makeup trailer just trying to get rid of all of those components, this glue. But it was impossible. Mm-hmm. I went back to my room at the hotel, and then I had to shave the glue off. I could see these little balls coming out of my face. So after 3 days, you may imagine when you get at 6 o'clock in the morning in the makeup trailer, start applying the glue again with the alcohol. I was screaming there.
Okay, all right.
But anyway,
You seem to be having fun. I had fun watching you. You obviously have a range of, this is a completely off-topic question, you have a range of Antonio Banderas fragrances. Potentially it's time for an Antonio Banderas moisturizer? A post-beard balm, perhaps?
Maybe I should talk to the company to release some kind of invention just to remove beards.
Not a bad idea. Was on the subject, Blue Seduction perfume, Antonio Bender, from one of your more recent scents.
Yes.
I'm a single man. Is this gonna make all the difference for me out there?
Absolutely. It's going to change your life. No, it's interesting that you went there. I didn't know you were going to talk about that side of my life. But I've been involved with this company from Barcelona for 18 years now. I mean, I think it's the longest involvement between a celebrity and a brand of perfumes. Yeah. And I feel pretty comfortable in that world. I am learning very much about not only just perfumes and fashion, but I am learning very much about business. And I want to continue. And I was talking to you before about the possibility to come to London to live here now.
Yes, please.
And one of the reasons that I want to do that is because I want to become a clothing designer.
Really?
And here is the best school in the world. It's called St. Martin's University.
Right.
And they are fabulous. And so I've been in talks with them, and probably I'm going to move here to do that. At 54 years old, I want to just initiate a new thing. It doesn't mean that I'm going to stop acting or directing or producing, which I will continue, of course. But I want to do more things. I feel young still.
Yeah.
And I want to just get into different territories. So That is not only a possibility, is very probable.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you're going to be a student again at 54?
I'm going to be a student. I'm going to elbows on the table.
Fantastic. You were talking about moving to London on a permanent basis, and I was saying perhaps Holloway Road. It's a student-y area.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of bars and pubs.
Right.
Cheap pints.
Dorms.
You don't have to live in a dorm if you don't want to. It's totally up to you. But that's fantastic. I mean, you've done many, many things in your career, obviously, from acting.
Yes.
And, you know, directing, obviously. You've directed a couple of times.
Yes.
I guess your first exposure to directing was working with Robert Rodriguez, wasn't it, on Desperado. You helped him a little bit post-production. Is that fair? Is that right?
Yeah, but I already directed by that time. The first time I directed was a movie called Crazy in Alabama.
Mm.
I directed there my ex-wife, Melanie, and it was a movie for Columbia Pictures. Right, that happened right when I finished the first Zorro. That was in 1998.
Yes.
And then, yes, with Robert Rodriguez, sometimes, I mean, this guy is so busy that some of the second units of the movie, I did the work for him. But that is not my own creativity. He just told me, hey, can you help me with this? He gave me, you know, a scheme of what he wanted to do, and I went and I did it, but it's not my own thing. And then I directed another movie in Spain. In the future, I see myself actually going behind the camera a little bit more and producing more. I would like to, as an actor, to work less in better productions and direct more. And I'm writing a lot these days, too. So the two movies that I directed, they were based in books. The third one, it has to be my own idea. And so I have three or four scripts right now on the table. I am writing more. I'm researching for another one. And so I would like to do that, to take that leap.
Will there be things that you star in as well, do you think, or purely direct?
Some of them probably, some of them no. Directing is very complicated. Directing yourself, I suppose, is going to be an extra complication.
Yeah.
And you need somebody. I need somebody that has the objectivity that you don't have when you are directing yourself from the outside. So it may happen at some point. I just feel with enough, you know, skills and experience that I just can direct myself. But so far, what I'm thinking now in my mind is just to direct other people.
Yes. Just interested in some of the way that you've constructed characters.
Right.
We loved you in Expendables 3 as Gal Gadot. I mean, the best thing in the movie, this kind of insecure but kind of brilliantly dangerous man.
Yeah.
And I understand that you brought a lot of the comedy to that character that wasn't necessarily on the page initially.
Well, you know, Sly Stallone made a huge mistake the first day that I went to the set. He said to me, you can do whatever you want, kid. And that's very dangerous, because I did. I basically changed the name of the character the first day and said, I don't like to be called Matador. It's just too Spanish. Come on.
Yeah.
Galgo.
Galgo means?
It's a greyhound.
Greyhound.
Dog.
Yeah.
And so from that moment on, I said to Sly, listen, you may understand this as a very serious thing, piece, but for me, it's comedy. You know, it's a comic book, what you're doing. It's not the Hard Locker. It's not, you know, American Sniper. It does based on reality in something that, but you are doing something that is fun.
Yeah.
And it's just choreographically action, you know, or action choreographed, whatever. And in that, I can see myself inserted as a comedian. I prefer to do that. And because I have a very strong accent, let me be the guy who talks the most.
Yes.
In the movie. Just let me just go over, you know, my own capacities. and let me just talk to a point that you guys have to roll eyes, okay? And he said to me, sure, whatever you want to do. And so I started just from there, and another character, I think he's going to be in number 4, too. So
I want to see a movie with just Galgo. I want to see, like, Galgo's backstory. And I don't often say that about a franchise.
No, actually, there were talks. We have a lot of problems, actually, with the Expendables, especially with the piracy. There were 17 million downloads only in the United States. So the movie there performed roughly, you know. And in the world, it was good. The movie made a final number of 200 and something. I mean, it was fine, you know, totally fine, more than fine. But you know, so that thing in the United States, it cooled down a little bit all the expectations that they have at the time. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I know that it's going to be a TV show, and they want me to be there. They want Galgo to be the main character. But I don't know if I'm going to do that or not. I have to think about this because there are other things going on. There are other movies that I'm very interested that go in a completely different direction. I may play Pablo Picasso in a production that Carlos Saura, a prominent Spanish director, is going to direct with Vittorio Storaro doing the photography.
Wow, really?
Gwyneth Paltrow performing Dora Maar. And so so there are projects out there in front of my face that call my attention very much. I mean, Picasso was born in my hometown in Malaga. Has been an enormous figure in my life always.
He was born like a few streets.
Two blocks. Two blocks. Every day when I used to go to school, and I always saw that, you know, tag on the wall saying, you know, Pablo Picasso was born here in 80, blah, blah, blah. And so, and he left Malaga basically with the same age I left. He has been always like that figure that I follow. Of course, I will never reach him. It's impossible. He was one of the biggest artists of the 20th century. But to play him, in a way, it's a big responsibility, especially because everybody in my hometown is going to put a magnifying glass in whatever I do with that character. But I think, you know, I am ready to assume that responsibility.
You are, you think so?
And go for it. Yeah. It's a beautiful story. It's just the story of the 30 days in which he painted the Guernica. That was for the Universal Exposition of Paris, 1937, right in the middle of the civil war in Spain. So it's the story of a man with a lot of tribulations, artistic tribulations, personal. At that time, he was having several relationships going on at the same time as a good Malagueño. and also politics, the war, and everything that was happening in Spain. You know, so it's a beautiful piece in which actually the Guernica can be used almost like a movie screen, in which we are going to have the possibility to just jump into that canvas and see, you know, the brain of this genius. So I would love to do that. Carlos Saura is a man that represents practically everything in the Spanish cinematography. He has 83 years in perfect condition. I mean, I would like to sign now a paper to arrive to 83 years old in the condition that he is. He's brilliant, physically perfect, and so I would like to work with him again.
You know? Yes. It's just amazing that you can be talking about Galgo and then maybe playing Picasso in the same breath. I think that's the joy.
That's the story of my life.
The joy of,
That's the story of my life. You know, walking in New York and seeing that in a movie theater it was Puss in Boots and 2 meters was the skin I live in.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, that's my career right there.
Yeah. You know? It's a fabulous movie, The Skin I Live In. Again, you're talking about creating a character. I know that Pedro Almodóvar asked you to kind of rein back in your acting instincts and just play it down a little bit. It's a film that's confronting in some ways. I know the films that it was kind of, it riffs on, the Hitchcockian stuff, was in its time as well. But I wondered what's the most kind of extreme reaction you've had to that film? Have people come up to you and said, oh my God?
It's a different animal. But everything that Pedro Almodóvar does is a different animal. Pedro Almodóvar broke the rules of the game of cinematography in Spain in the 80s, and so he travels always with that. He doesn't like to use something that has been used already.
Yes.
And so he, even with the actors, you know, he destroys you during the rehearsal period to build you, a new you. And that's very painful. Working with Pedro Almodóvar is very complicated, but you have to understand that there is an end to this. But yeah, he didn't just take the rag out of your feet. He prefers for you to be a new you. And that makes you feel very uncomfortable, because normally the tendency that we actors have is just to hang on things that already worked for people. But then you are doing a repetition of yourself all the time. And I mean, it can be commercially perfect, you know, because that's what your audience, you know, your audience is looking from you. But Pedro Almodóvar doesn't go. And so it was, it was a great kind of a new invention. I remember still the reactions in Film Festival. I remember in Canada, the people, in the moment that I performed that operation on the kid, transforming into a woman, he asked me, what did you do to me, still with the anesthesia in his brain? And I say, vagina plastic. And the whole entire theater went like, oh, no! So people were very surprised about not just the content of the movie, but the form in which it's expressed, cold, distant, different to other Pedro Almodovar's too. So he deconstructs himself when he's doing this thing. And yes, it has something to do with Hitchcock, but Hitchcock got that type of approach also to his movies. He got a certain coldness in it. And it was very interesting. And he created also his own universe. It doesn't look like anybody else. Hitchcock is Hitchcock. Like Luis Buñuel is Luis Buñuel, or John Huston is John Huston. Those guys that have personality, that they are not standard directors. They are directors with tremendous personality. And you see a couple of shots of some of those movies of these guys, and immediately you recognize them.
You came through, obviously, with Pedro discovered you initially, and you came through a time when the censorship had lifted in Spain, and this was amazing outpouring of creativity in cinema there. And then you went to Hollywood, and you found your way into the Mambo Kings, and then House of Spirits, and then Philadelphia, and that at that time, and you kind of almost fell into it. And I wondered, like, if you were to repeat that journey now, the way that Hollywood's changed and the way that you've seen it change, how different would it be? Would you need to find a franchise to be involved in? Would you need a superhero to attach yourself to, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know even how things happen at the time. I suppose that I am the result of something bigger than movies. My career in America has to do with something bigger than movies. It has to do with, you know, big waves of immigration, immigrants coming from South America, from countries like Mexico, Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, looking for a better life, escaping from politics, social injustice, and many different problems, economics. And they went to the United States, and they work very hard for their kids to go and do university. And those kids came out of the universities and started just going to positions that were different than the ones that their fathers had, you know. So they are architects and doctors, and now they're in the Supreme Court. And that thing has to have a reflection in Hollywood. Mm. And I think I arrived at that particular time in which the Spanish community in the United States was taking a step ahead socially. And they become a big market, among other things. Yeah. And so Hollywood saw that, and I arrived right there in that moment. And because I remember when I did the Mambo Kings, some of them, my fellow actors that were working with me at the time, they said to me, if you're going to stay here in America, you're going to play bad guys, because that's what we do. You know, Spanish actors play bad guys, like black guys play bad guys too. And that changed. One day I remember just doing Zorro, that I was just there in my chair just waiting for a take. And I saw the bad guy in the movie, and he was blonde, he had blue eyes, he got a perfect American accent, and he was called Capitan Love. And I was the guy with the accent and with dark skin, and it was the hero of the movie. So things started changing and changing a little by little. Even Puss in Boots, even that character.
Yeah.
It's important that he has an accent and the bad guys don't. Why? Because it's for kids. And in the mind of kids, they're taking away that idea that a guy with an accent is supposed to be the bad guy. And you can be the hero, too. So it's expanding, you know, the understanding of how we see other people in the world.
Yes.
And so I think I arrived at that particular timing with those things were changing. Now, imagine, I mean, look at the Oscars this year. Iñárritu took 3 Oscars on a row. And now it's not necessary, actually, that a Spanish director direct a movie that has to be of Spanish culture. Mm. No, Alfonso Cuarón directed Gravity last year. What Gravity has to do with the Spanish community? Nothing. It's just a movie about the space station, International Space Station, and it's Sandy Bullock and George Clooney. So, you know, that should be the normality.
Yeah.
And it's becoming the normality.
Yeah. More globalized.
Yeah.
Globalized Hollywood. English people make good bad guys these days, though. Maybe one day we can dream that we English will not be typecast.
But you know why? Because the bad characters are normally more complex and more difficult than the bad guys. And British actors are very good, let me tell you.
Yes.
They're known for their quality. they're most of them coming from theater. They got a commitment with the audience. They're, you know, they're very well trained, prepared actors. I'm telling you that because I work with a lot of British actors, and I love working with British actors. It's a pleasure.
You've worked with Hannibal Lecter, obviously, in Anthony Hopkins
and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
And Catherine Zeta-Jones, yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
Zorro. I understand this is a bit of trivia. I'm not sure if it's true or not. But Martin Campbell, the director, said that you were described as Grumpy Bob on the set of Zorro because you were such a perfectionist with your sword fighting that you were very, I don't know if grumpy is fair, but just very, very focused on getting it all absolutely right. Is that true? Is that something you've heard before? People called you Grumpy Bob?
Probably he did. Probably I didn't know what that means at the time. But... yeah, well, Martin is like a general. And he goes to the set knowing that he got a lot of people in front of him and he's kind of an army in front of him. So he goes there with a feeling. Mm. And it's true. Yeah, there are 1,000 people with three different units and a lot of things going on at the same time. So he got to be very strong just to make himself, you know, respected.
You just,
so, yeah, probably he called me that and many other things.
And what did you call him?
I don't know, something in Spanish. He couldn't understand me.
The sword, I mentioned the sword fighting because there is some sword fighting in SpongeBob, which I have to get back to. I wanted to ask you, was your daughter, Stella, was she a fan of SpongeBob? Did she get you into it in the first place or have you come to it recently?
Yes, I mean, I've seen her seeing that, but... My daughter Stella has been very much, believe it or not, but this is true, not so much into television.
Okay.
She has been a girl that got into books very, very early, and she became a compulsive reader. Oh. She loved that type of universes, and she's going to university next year. And so I don't know if she's going to do literature, but I think it's going to be something close to that. It's going to be around that type of, you know, approach to arts, more than the camera. And she's a very, you know, different girl if I compare her with other girls of her generation.
So you're both going to be students at exactly the same time.
That's right.
That's amazing. I love that. I assume she's seen a bunch of your movies. Did you have to explain the catnip joke in Shrek to her at any point?
Did you?
How did you explain that?
But I did it years later.
Oh, okay. You had to wait.
Didn't explain it. She came to me and says, I saw that, the movie again, and that's what it means. And I said, yeah, but only for adults, you know, because it's not explicit. You can understand whatever you want. You know, it's just a bag. And that's it. But, you know, it just plays in both ways. You know.
It's just a bag of innocent powder. What could be wrong with that? There's talk of another Puss in Boots movie. The first one was a big, big success. People love the character. Yeah. And talk of him going further. Puss in Boots 2, 9 Lives and 40 Thieves.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of characters. Where is he going to go?
Well, they are restructuring now the script.
Right.
We started, but that's the process. You know, the process with these movies is way longer than the people think, and a lot of people got a participation in the creation of the script and the story and the narrative process and everything. And they include you, too. They take you to San Jose, California. They sit you there with the creators. They make you read the script with them. You give them your ideas, and a couple of months later, you receive a news in which everything has been touched, you know, so that we are in that process. We did a session months ago. They're now restructuring everything. And probably by the end of the year, we're going to start just laying down the tracks, the new recording. It's going to take a while. It's going to take probably a couple of years just to get the movie done. And I heard some rumors also that Shrek may be coming.
Really? Well, he might cameo in Puss in Boots 2.
That would be great.
Nine Lives and 40 Thieves.
That would be great.
And an ogre.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is Puss in Boots going to take well to
Shrek doing a cameo in my movie? Uh-huh. Yeah, we'll lay that.
It's politics. I have to let you go soon, unfortunately, because it's been a real pleasure. But I've got a couple more quick questions.
Go ahead.
One more on SpongeBob, which is, as I say, colossally fun. Your character, Burger Beard, he has his own, it turns out, he has his own kind of pirate galleon stroke food van.
Right.
Now, I know you're a very keen... gastronome cook, what would you serve in an Antonio Banderas or Antonio Vanderas, if you will?
I would serve a very pirated paella.
Pirate paella, really?
Yeah, from Spain. Yeah, absolutely. Black rice.
Oh, is that the secret to a good paella? Black rice?
Yeah, black rice or something like that. I never knew what the Krabby Patty or the Patty Krabby was. Really, I just went around asking for the formula to the creators of SpongeBob, but they never told me.
There is actually such a thing.
No, I don't think it exists. No, it doesn't. No, it has been a lot of fun, actually. You know, the whole entire process to understand, actually, all the surreal side of this fantastic, phenomenal character that is now part of the, not only American pop culture, but the world pop culture. Yeah. Is incredible. And just in the premise of the main character, the fact that he is a sponge makes you think something that is very beautiful for kids.
Yeah.
And that is that anything is possible. And so that's the universe that SpongeBob is opening the mind of everybody.
Yeah.
Anything is possible.
And if you're going back to university now,
anything is possible.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, Antonio.
You're very welcome.